Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Let me go ahead and call the Mesa City Council study session of Monday, August 13th to 2007 to order. I'd like to welcome everybody back from a kind of an extended summer break. Item number one is to review items on the agenda for this evening's meeting that will begin at 5:45. So let's grab that part of the packet and we'll go through. Nothing on page one, page two, resolutions on the Main Street property. Councilmember Griswold.
Just a small clarification of the minutes, but in the minutes it spoke that I was a high school teacher at the local high schools 15 years. I taught a business class one day a week, so I don't know if that makes me a high school teacher or not, but that's my only clarification reading through these months of notes that we had to go through. So.
Why don't you read the minutes as amended, then, and we'll make an amendment to that fact in the minutes, if that's okay. Anyone object to that? All right. Anything else on page two? All right. Again, we'll have the public hearing for a public hearing, a resolution, an ordinance, and also a resolution vacating a street on the first issue. John.
Mayor, if I may, on item 3D, that's the last of those items you were just referring to, there is a staff update on the recommendation for that, and Mr. Crocker from Real Estate is going to explain that.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. On item 3D, since the council report was written, there's been a change in our recommendation. We are now recommending alternative one to vacate Sanders Street from Main all the way up to Pepper Street. All the property owners are in agreement to do this.
No, that's what I have in my packet. Is that something different?
It changed and now it's changed back.
Okay, so.
Mayor, at one point there was a resident who was not in favor of their portion of the right-of-way being abandoned. So we've kind of fallen in between. The staff was trying to be respectful of that property owner's request. We understand as of today, all property owners have agreed to the abandonment from the entire portion from Pepper to Main. So our recommendation then would correspondingly, we concur with that, essentially.
Okay.
So we just need to make that clear, because we had to write this when things were kind of moving a little bit.
Right. So the description that we have on page three of our packet, alternative one, is the one that staff is recommending.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. All right, that takes us to page three, then. There are two liquor licenses that are the Super Walmart and also the Bass Pro Shop that both fit into the Riverview development area that I have consistently indicated that I had a conflict on. And I know I've had a little bit of correspondence legally. Does a liquor license and zoning, are they separate and distinct, or should I continue to declare a conflict on those two?
Mayor, under the statute, you only have a legal conflict of interest if you have a proprietary or monetary interest in the issue being decided by the council. So I do not think that you have a legal conflict of interest on either of those issues. Okay. So then the question comes down to whether you believe there's an appearance of impropriety under the ethics handbook.
In this case, I don't think so. But Tom, where are you at?
I agree. I intend to vote on that.
Okay. Let's leave both of them on. Then. All right. Okay, that's page three. Page four, Vice Mayor.
I just wanted to know if the rumor was true that a council member from District 6 is taking all this to the Cheesecake Factory that's opening in his district. Is that true, Council Member Summers?
Taking my wife. The rest of you can come Dutch if you like.
Okay. All right. That's page four. Let's try page five. We get into have one bingo application, then we get into contracts. Continued on page six. Additional contracts on page seven. I had a question on 7K. This is 30 traffic signal uninterruptible power supply units, $123,000. And I guess my question is the percentage of power outages who covers them now. I guess when I've seen massive power outages, they seem to mobilize a lot of police officers to the major intersections. Is that going to take care of that dispatching of officers, or how did you prioritize these?
That's correct, Mayor. It would, actually. We'd be installing 30. I can't tell you the percentage of time they're down exactly, but it's happening on a pretty regular basis. We try to keep the city manager's office updated, maybe weekly. It could be one intersection, it could be 10. But what we've done is we prioritize the intersections based on traffic volumes and crash history. So these are going to be the busy intersections that are difficult to manually control for PD. So if a device were deployed there, we have up to about 4 hours of time, and most of the outages are an hour or less. So we'd be able to cover, and it wouldn't require then a PD officer to maintain traffic.
Okay, so it's been assessed that the PD officers, and usually if there's a power outage, there's other things going on with other accidents because there's usually a storm. So that's a high demand, and it's a shortage of officers. So is that part of the analysis on this $123,000?
I would say, Mayor, yes, it is, simply because, first of all, when we have a storm like Dan said, I remember 2 weeks ago, we had at least half a dozen to eight signals out. Of course, you can't always predict which ones are going to be, but they've taken a look at the most prime ones,
okay,
and they've selected those.
All right. That's page 7, page 8. Can somebody tell me how a leak control detector system works on 7N? Does it go by sound, or how do you detect a... This is a $150,000 instrument that's fluid conservation systems, and it's supposed to detect leaks underneath the street, or how does this thing...
Mayor and Council, the system has two components to it. One of them is a series of small little radio transmitter data loggers that will go throughout a selected part of the city. In this case, we're going to start with old cast iron pipe downtown, and these set on valve stems throughout the city, and then we monitor them with a vehicle, kind of like you do an automatic meter reading system. If we get reads on several of them, which, as you indicated, it's an acoustic type system, that kind of narrows down an area, tells us there's a leak there. We then go in with the second part of the system, which is a little bit older technology. It's been around about 25, 30 years, where you set up on between two spots, usually on two valves, and it's kind of a small computer, and based on sound, it kind of pinpoints the actual location of the leak within 2 or 3 feet.
Okay, so that theoretically you could detect a leak before it has undermined a big cavity.
Absolutely.
And the street collapses.
I've got some experience on these from my previous job, and we could find leaks that were anywhere between 1/2 to 5 gallons a minute.
Okay, I knew they could do that on electrical circuitry. I didn't know you could do that on water.
So again, the technology, I purchased one in my last job in about 1984, 85, so that second phase has been around for quite a while.
Okay, all right. Councilmember Griswold.
As long as you're on the subject, on 7L, there's remote meter readers, or actually new meters on there. Are those have capabilities of doing remote reading?
I'm not involved in that part.
Oh, there's, all right. So I know we're...
That's almost like the art center there.
Yes, Mayor. Council, the meters that we are buying, we have the ability to be read remotely.
And that's the direction we're going. A modern city is not having people driving around, having dogs bite them, but we're going to go to remote reading and access to meters.
We are reviewing that, and hopefully we'll be able to make a recommendation in the coming months.
Okay, thank you.
Did that shine a little light on that side over there, Tom, or what happened?
I think this might be a Homeland Security issue. I think it might be an assassination attempt. Sure.
Just had a little piece of tile or something, or a cover fall off the ceiling here. So, okay. All right, we're on page 8. Let's try page 9. I've been informed I have a conflict on 7S. So
7S?
S. Which is currently off consent, so that's why.
Okay.
I'll declare that upstairs. It's page 9, page 10. Vice Mayor.
On 8A, this is an annexation case where part of the people who are involved want to be annexed into the city and part do not. And we had determined, we had a conversation as a council, that we were not going to annex people who did not want to be annexed in. I'm curious that this is still on the agenda. Have these folks been notified that the council had given direction to staff that we were not interested in annexing in unwilling people? Because my understanding is, if we're only annexing the people who want to be annexed, they have to take out an entirely new petition.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, that is correct. We have talked to the applicant in this case and let them know the council policy direction that we have received previously, both just in general about annexations and more particularly since the passage of Proposition 207 and the added complication that brings to annexation without 100% of the property owners signing off on that. The applicant had started this petition effort prior to Proposition 207, and despite not meeting that standard, he has met the basic state requirement, so he wanted the opportunity to come before council and discuss this case with the council and see if he couldn't persuade you to move forward even in the circumstance. This is on here as introduction. Typically on introduction we would just have this on consent, but given the situation we thought it would be valuable for the council to go ahead and discuss it tonight and decide if you really want to proceed with the annexation or go ahead at this point if you know you're not going to pass it to not even introduce the ordinance.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I'm going to vote no on the introduction. I don't really see a point in introducing it, but if the gentleman isn't here tonight to speak, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to him.
We have advised him to be here this evening.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
May I speak on this?
You can upstairs, but not at this time. We're just going through the agenda. Thank you, though. All right. That's page 10, page 11. Did anybody else get fooled by the PHO recommendation? It's the public hearing officer.
Planning.
All right. I had to actually ask staff what that meant because we've changed now and allowed that to take place, but I wasn't familiar with the initials, so that's what it is. That's all right. We have zoning cases on page 11, continued on page 12, and additional ones on page 13. I think these are all unanimous recommendations. Vice Mayor.
Mayor, on 8L, there is a three-quarter vote requirement legal protest. This is because this is an introduction, I'm assuming we can still leave it on consent for the introduction unless somebody pulls it off.
That's correct. For the introduction, it only requires four votes, but then when it's considered in 2 weeks, it would be six votes.
Thank you.
Councilmember Griswold.
Sort of a legal question. I understand one of the people that were on part of the protest have sold the property, and the new person in the property is in favor of it. Do you still have the right to protest if you no longer own the property?
Councilmember Griswold, I'd have to take a look at that. If they were the owner at the time the petition was signed, they probably have that right to, I mean, they had the right at the time they signed it. I guess I would want to know more facts in terms of who was the owner at the time the petition was sent around. You can certainly, if the new owner comes to you and says, this is my position now, you can certainly take that into consideration, but I don't believe it would invalidate the petition.
Even though they don't own the property anymore?
That's correct, because it depends on when it was turned in, when the petition was turned in, and when the signature was signed.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, that's page 13, page 14. We get into resolutions. And 9A and 9B, I believe, all because of Councilmember Whalen has a conflict. Right, page 15. On 9E, we have several of these that are grant applications, and I believe there will be, I'd like 9E pulled, first of all. I think there's a question of the sports complex and fees being charged versus being open, and there's also, I believe, some neighborhood questions about the sports complex that have been arisen, so if we can pull 9E, I would appreciate that. All right. Uh, 9I indicated that the East Valley Gang and Criminal Information Fusion Center was going to be, we have a briefing packet in front, and also that it was going to be used with asset forfeiture funds. We're going to do the equipment of it. if we have time, I'd like to go through the packet and come back to this one, because I really am impressed with the partnership that's been created. So let's go through and see where we are time-wise, and then if it's okay, we'll go back to item 9I, if nobody objects to that. All right, that's page 15, page 16. And they're all resolutions on consent, page 17. And continued on page 18 and page 19. I think that's the first time I've seen us go through the alphabet and start over again. Yes, Vice Mayor.
We have the sale of some property here. It's one-time money, and I just want to reiterate the council, what I thought was the council's position, that one-time money should be used for one-time expenses. Is that still the direction that we're operating under, Mr. Brady?
Yes, it is.
Okay, just want to make sure. Thank you, Mayor.
And so what's the policy of bringing back the one-time expense and matching the two up?
I'm sorry, Mayor.
How do you match the two up, the one-time money with the one-time expenditures?
Well, that's typically done in the budget process, and we'll talk about if we're purchasing capital or equipment, maybe certain projects. Well, we talked about, you know, I remember in the presentation there were some items that we didn't fund this past year. Like we were short, I think, like $500,000 for doing some upgrades in an EOC building or something like that. There's a list of items where we try to identify them as one-time capital expenditures.
Okay, but we're not taking it to extend bus routes? Or
no, sir.
Okay. All right. Just wanting to make sure that that's the process we're going through. Tom?
Not exactly sure what page we're on now, but I had a question on 18, item 9X,
okay,
dealing with the public grant and the participation of our fire department in the vaccination programs. I just want to make sure, I want to know if there's, what cost, if any, are borne by the fire department that is not covered by these grants?
Mayor and Councilmember Rawls, this is Pam Bischoff. We've been doing the immunization program for about 10 years, and Pam oversees that program, and she can answer those kind of questions for you.
Okay.
At this time, everything is covered by grant.
Okay.
Or
all overtime?
Correct.
I'm not sure what the word is, dislocation of officers or paramedics from other duties during this program, and then is our fire protection EMT service decreased at all because we're participating in the vaccination program?
No, they're asked if they'd like to volunteer to do it as an overtime activity, but they're off duty and they come in, or on occasion someone would be TDY'd and we would have,
okay,
the funds are still paid through someone, you know, through the grant, but the fire trucks are still staffed at their usual level.
Okay, so there's no reallocation, that was the word I was looking for, the reallocation of resources away from the primary function of the fire department, mm-hmm, to perform this.
No.
And there's no additional cost to the city as a result of participating in this vaccination program.
That is correct. These are off-duty paramedics that are given these immunizations, and that's what the grant pays for.
Okay, that's what I wanted to. Well, you say off-duty, but then there's discussion in the council study about overtime.
Right, and that's what the grant pays for them to come in
off-duty overtime.
Right.
That's correct, and the grant pays for all that.
Right, Mayor, Councilman Walls, we can't ask our firefighters to volunteer off-duty for something like this without
running
overtime.
Right,
so that's what it is. That's the distinction.
Right. It's a
correct
legal term here.
It's
what we have
the city
to do, and that's
right.
What I wanted to clarify. Is,
right.
Okay, very good. On that one, and then the other one is, we were on 9AA and 9BB, or were we not? I couldn't remember.
Let me follow up on yours for just a second. How far does that go as far as full cost recovery? I mean, the other aspect of it is retirement, and there's a whole bunch of other things that go into their salary. That, have you looked at that extent, or just the direct cost of what that salary is?
It's just paying for the salary that it takes. If it's 2 hours overtime, that covers the cost of their overtime for that event, for the immunizations.
All right, so the contribution into the retirement fund and the rest, is that all figured into that overtime rate?
The overtime rate includes everything on overtime, and I'm not sure if you're meaning for long-term?
Just the
It's the hourly rate, and everything is included in that when they cover the overtime.
Okay, maybe discovered then. Right. Go ahead, Tom.
I didn't want to get ahead, but I couldn't remember where Claudia jumped in.
Page 19.
Oh, we are at 9AA and 9IBB. I just want to make a statement here that these two are connected, and we have not gone out to the public for any kind of bid on the property that's reflected in 9BB, because selling of the property to Redstone Investments is part of the consideration that has gone into the voluntary and mutual release that's set forth in 9AA. So whenever we see the sale of public property and we basically almost sole source this, the people in the community have a right to get nervous. Why are you doing it? And I just think it's important to explain publicly that we're doing it because the sale is part of the release of the legal obligations that we have and of the legal obligations that Redstone Investments have. So there's a quid pro quo here. We couldn't go out to the public and say, we'll sell this to the highest bidder. And that's right, Ms. Spinner, correct?
Because we are currently under, the development agreement still exists and it has not been formally terminated, you're correct.
Right.
We could possibly go forward and unilaterally terminate the development agreement.
Which potentially would lead to legal claims, and what we're doing here is resolving all outstanding and potential legal claims as well as more than recovering the cost of the property.
That's correct, Councilmember Rawls.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, we're on page 11.
No,
19. Nope, I'm sorry. Read wrong. Page 19. Let's not go back to page 11. All right. Any questions additional? All right. Page 20, subdivision plots. And that's it. Let's go to item number 2, and then we'll come back later to 9I. It looks like we'll probably have time. There's the council appointments to special boards and committees, and those are listed.
Move for approval.
And a motion and second for approval. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Item number 3 is here reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Let me go ahead and do that one. Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. I asked you before I did this because there were so many that I was doing over the break that I wanted to know how many of you them you wanted to hear. You said as many as I would like to throw in, so I'm going to just touch on the highlights here, and I appreciate your allowing me to fill in while you were out of town. We had the opening of the Mountain Vista Medical Center campus, the new medical center in East Mesa at Chrisman in the US 60. I also attended an urban area mobile training with the Naval Postgraduate School, along with some other mayors in the valley, and I'll talk about that a little bit in more detail in a moment. We had the grand opening for A.T. Still University Medical School, which means that Mesa not only has a dental school, the only dental school in the state, but we also have one of the medical schools in the state. We have a wonderful K-12 education, but we also have postgraduate education. You can get a Ph.D. out at ASU Poly, and you can get a medical degree, and you can get a dental degree. And I asked them, had they looked into a veterinary medicine school? And that's what we need. We need somebody to bring that to us because I think we'll then pretty much cover all of the areas. Additionally, that same day we had the announcement of Allegiant Airlines having Williams Gateway Airport as one of its hubs, and they have just begun announcing the destinations. They're going to each one of those destinations and announcing, and the Chicago-Rockford area was the first one announced, and there may be more that happened today that I haven't heard about. You might know about that, Mayor. I attended the Resolutions Committee for the Arizona League of Cities and Towns, and also accepted an award from Southwest Ambulance on behalf of the city for, let me say this the other way around, went to give an award to Southwest Ambulance because of their partnership with us on the Making Waves program, which provides swim lessons for kids, and they have been great community partners for us, which leads me to this ribbon that I'm wearing, which is a purple ribbon, because this month is drowning awareness and watching your kids around water, and so I think we might all have gotten purple ribbons at our offices. I also attended the groundbreaking for Larry John Wright Advertising, which is a firm that's located in West Mesa. They needed more space, so they relocated to another spot in West Mesa, and they're expanding their facility. They do national advertising, not just local, and they're one of the large local advertising agencies. These folks have elected to stay in Mesa, and we're really glad for that. also welcome the new employees from Mesa Public Schools. And we have some members of our staff. I was in a meeting with Gordon Sheffield that afternoon, and I said, do you have anything else before we leave the meeting? He said, yes, my daughter's one of those new employees at Mesa Schools you're welcoming tonight. So we like that when we hear that people have chosen to stay in our community and work here. I also attended on August 8th the All Hazards Training for the Mayoral Institute Seminar, All Hazards Training, and this is the one that I'd like to focus on for just a minute. This really is important, and I don't think people know that it's going on. And Mayor, I'm assuming that you have participated in this in past years, but the mayors in the region get together and they do all hazards training for things like if there were a dirty bomb that went off, any kind of hazard, if you had a microburst, if you had something that required an emergency status for your community or even for the larger region. We are preparing at this time for top off, which is top officials four, which is going to involve Arizona, Oregon, and Guam. That will be taking place in October. There are concerns, when you listen to the mayors of the region, their concerns are very, very similar. They are concerned that people have heard over and over and over again, you need to be prepared in case something bad happens. Our hope is that nothing bad will ever happen. As a matter of fact, isn't that the rule? If you get prepared, then nothing bad will happen. So we're asking people to please, please don't become complacent about this. We recognize that it's 6 years since September 11th. We hope that nothing like that will ever happen again in our country. But there is a need for people to be self-sufficient. If you go to the fire department's website and look at that, it gives you a lot of information about emergency preparedness. Families need to be, and individuals need to be self-sufficient. They need to be able to take care of themselves for at least 72 hours following a disaster. And that was the message that every one of those mayors wanted to make sure got out into the broader community. There also is a concern about lack of communication, potentially between staff who seem to be very, very connected to each other and speaking to each other, and the elected officials. And so we had a lot of conversations about that. And then finally today, I met with President Baer of the Fort McDowell community. He invited me to come out for lunch to follow up on some discussions we had. They really appreciate, Mayor, working with you and the partnership that we have with them. They would like to have additional partnerships. So thank you. That's my report on what I didn't do when I was, what I did when I wasn't having a summer vacation, which I really haven't had yet. Thank you.
I appreciate you filling in for me. You know that. I would like to do just a quick update on some things that are happening in MAG Regional Council and the MAG Executive Committee. And Chris even had a MAG Managers meeting, and it has to do with the I-10 widening project and the STAN money. The STAN was the State Transportation Advancement money. 2 years ago, the money came in and it didn't have any strings attached, so we accelerated all projects. This year it was $64 million, and there were some, nobody likes to call them earmarking, but it was kind of an earmarked for the I-10 additional lanes, the Goodyear, Avondale area over in the West Valley. And it certainly is in need of some additional capacity out there. I don't think that anyone disagrees. But it was for the interest expense that the cities had agreed to pay to accelerate the design and the construction. And so they ran some legislative bills and indicated that this was for acceleration projects after a certain date, and it was pretty well written so that there wasn't a lot of confusion on which one they had in mind. But Mesa also has some projects that we accelerated with bond money, if you remember. The US 60, the Red Mountain, both of those projects had substantial money. So I was disappointed to see some of the West Valley communities and the legislature doing money that is not new money. It's reappropriated money from existing HERF money and such to earmark where that would be spent, somewhat out of the order of what we would normally do. So there's some discussions now, and the other one is, if it's all paid back, then what's the skin in the game for acceleration? That is an ongoing discussion. The Transportation Policy Committee will, which I am the vice chair of, will handle that in about a week, and then it'll go back to the regional council. It's one of the more decisive issues here because there's not a very good policy on it. And one of the ideas is just to reject it, which doesn't make sense. But if you accept it, then how do you keep 23 communities from going to the legislature and say, hey, next year, you know, list my bill? So that's an issue that's ongoing. I think we'll get through it. We may take a reduced amount, and I think Goodyear is willing to spend the money that they promised originally. It's more with Avondale and Litchfield Park. And then Buckeye pulled out of the deal, and they accelerated the freeway, so they didn't have to do it. So they came in after the fact and weren't one of the three that came forward. So it's very complicated, but I did want to, in case you hear something about it, we're trying to work it through and make sure that the region isn't harmed by starting an earmarking process at the legislature. So anyone else want to have any updates today? Councilmember Whelan.
Just real quick, Mayor, I had the opportunity of speaking at the fire department recruit graduation on Friday the 3rd, where we welcomed 21 new firefighters to the city. Class 2007-1 was well represented. It looks like a great class, and they are currently serving their six-month stints at Mesa Fire Station. But thank you for the fire staff for inviting, and it was a great event.
Okay. Anyone else? All right, let's go to scheduling and meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Welcome back. Summer break. So we're going to go ahead and just move on down the road here. We have a Thursday study session at 7:30 a.m. Directly following that meeting, there will be an Intergovernmental Affairs Committee meeting following the study session Thursday. And then, of course, we have another study session on August 23rd at 7:30. And that will be then followed by a Transportation and Infrastructure Committee meeting. And then we have our Monday, August 27th study session and council meeting. So we'll continue to follow that on going on out. And just one quick announcement we share with the council, that the City of Mesa's Procurement Services Department was received an award, the Achievement of Excellence in Procurement Award. We see they are usually on our agenda all the time, but this award, I think, is significant. Only 14 Arizona agencies received this award this past year, and only 147 nationwide. So we want to express congratulations to our Procurement Services Department for this national recognition. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. All right. Let's go back then to item number 9I. And this is the East Valley Gang and Criminal Information Fusion Center.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. I'm Gil Atanas. I'm here representing Chief Gascon, who's out of town. The Gang and Criminal Information Fusion Center was originally envisioned as a Mesa police unit by Chief Gascon in presentations to the East Valley Chiefs. He described the vision, and the other chiefs became interested in this project. After several meetings and discussions, the chiefs for Chandler, Gilbert, Scottsdale, Tempe Police Department, and Salt River Indian Police expressed an interest in partnering with Mesa in this project. They have worked out the details, and we're now ready to kick it off with your approval for this IGA. I have Sergeant Kevin Baggs. Sergeant Baggs will be the supervisor over that unit, and he'll go over a presentation that we put together. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. I was fortunate enough to be tasked with the early portions of developing this fusion center, and the question's been asked me quite a bit is, what is the Fusion Center and what's it going to do? Attached is a presentation I presented to the East Valley Chiefs early on. I've condensed it, and hopefully Mayor and Council have a pretty good understanding of what we're doing and why we place so much emphasis on this project. Essentially, the Fusion Center, in layman's terms, is going to be an information sharing mechanism. It's a venue for all the departments to now share information in a more streamlined way and hopefully enhance our efforts in fighting crime. The members involved, or the departments involved, as Chief Otani has just mentioned, there's, in addition to that, we have each agency is providing one officer or person, not necessarily sworn. And then, in addition to that, we're also having some agencies, as you'll see at the bottom of the page, ATF, Department of Corrections, Maricopa County, probation are also going to be providing support. We hope with future successes that their roles will be enhanced. The other notation is Salt River. Their involvement's pending. They're certainly involved, and they've been involved as we've gone along. They're just working towards clearing up whatever legal issues they have to that are unique to their reservation. It's staffed by the six people, and our hours of operation, we're hoping right now it's going to be simply a day shift operation 5 days a week. However, with success, we're hoping to increase that and have enhanced coverage of 7 days a week with 20-hour coverage. The facilities, it's housed on the fourth floor of Mesa PD headquarters. There's 8 shared workstations. It's equipped with computers, internet access, and monitors, and secured. It's a secured room up with the law enforcement sensitive information that may be passed around. It's going to be limited access. I've mentioned information, and that's essentially the crux of what this is. It's information related to criminal investigations, crime trends, suspicious activity. The sources of that information, and this could expand, but I just briefly, it's the incident reports. It's a lot of information we already gather. However, it's never gleaned and then disseminated in a streamlined manner. FI cards, which are the field interview cards that officers complete on all their initial contacts, calls for service, and then the last one is COPLINK, which is really going to handle the lion's share of all the information exchange. And that's a computer database that houses information from all the participating agencies. And then the information, it'll be gathered and then sent to the Fusion Center electronically. And then this is where the folks at the Fusion Center can do the lion's share of their work, and that's analyzing the data for multi-jurisdictional crime patterns or trends. The information is combined and then disseminated. And this should be a much quicker turnaround than what we've realized in the past. And then its dissemination is going to be key, because that's going to be back down to the patrol level. And each and every briefing in the East Valley will now have information regarding crime patterns, crime trends, outstanding suspects, things like that. I developed a scenario to kind of see and bring it all together. And I have to say this is a fictitious scenario. We're not looking for anyone involved in the write-up, but it kind of shows how this will work, and then down the road we hope this will be the norm. But essentially, Scottsdale Police received several suspicious vehicle reports on a black Cadillac Escalade with California license plate in the area of Fashion Square Mall over a period of 1 week. The responding officer submits this information to the Fusion Center via the daily information download. The Mesa Police Department respond to an armed robbery at Fiesta Mall. Witnesses report a suspect description of two males wearing masks, and the suspect vehicle was a black Cadillac Escalade with an unknown California plate. Now, many times the investigation, we'd be working at it, and really after a lengthy investigation, we may bring this to a successful conclusion. But here, with the Fusion Center bulletin that's been disseminated, a Chandler police gang detective reviewed the bulletin. He identifies a possible vehicle and suspect from recent contacts at a Chandler address. Documented gang members recently moved to this address from California, and a black Escalade associated with this address has a California license plate. The Chandler detective then contacts Mesa and Scottsdale, and hopefully this case is now brought to a successful conclusion much sooner rather than later. And so we have a case where the case is solved in Mesa, perhaps a crime is prevented in Scottsdale, and Chandler, there are one less gang member. And that's essentially how it will all come together. The work product's going to be, we'll start out with a biweekly bulletin. We hope to make that a daily bulletin. We're just going to start off and grow from there, and that's where we're at.
Mayor, also, I think what's the really want to commend the police department, because this is kind of a first step, what might end up being a lot more, I think. And we talk about the Fusion Center, we mentioned COPLINK and the opportunities there to share that information and a powerful resource that it might be. And I think there are, as the group gets together and with the other agencies, the power of that networking of information becomes very powerful. Today I think we try to cooperate as much as possible, but this, I guess, more formalizes it and puts everybody in the same room, sitting right next to each other, sharing information. So I think it can become a very powerful tool that we recognize crime doesn't respect jurisdictional boundaries, wherever they might be. And I think as this continues to be successful, we look at other ways to bring other agencies in and maybe even other opportunities on a lot of other collaborations. So we just wanted to highlight, I believe Chandler has already approved this agreement, and I'm not sure who else. Do we have, don't you know? I know Chandler has, because I saw that report, but are the other communities, are they gone to their councils yet?
I believe Tempe has approved theirs. I've not heard on the other three. Yes, they're all pending, as and we're proposing it. Mesa's contribution is one detective, and then Sergeant Baggs part-time. He also has the major felon unit, so he's running two units. Also, the National Guard has contributed a crime analyst, and then Scottsdale is a crime analyst, and Chandler, Gilbert, and Tempe are providing officers or detectives. And we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, I think I read that the other material, like computers and stuff, were asset forfeiture expenditures, or is that from each community, or is that Mesa's?
At this point, Mayor, Mesa's contributed the computers and the desk from our asset forfeiture. Again, our original vision was this was going to be a Mesa unit. So we have provided those equipments and fixtures. The other part of it is it belongs to us if for some reason we're disbanding.
Right, and if somebody, how can additional data be, what would be the citizen contact to report something that's going on if they don't want to dial 911, but they really feel there's a lot of activity at the house next door or something else going on? How can the citizens help with the law enforcement here in Mesa? What's the call number?
Mayor, they would provide the information the same way they are now. They can call 911, have an officer come out if it's an emergency situation. They could call one of our hotlines if it was gang-related or drug-related. The thing is, Mesa citizens would contribute that information through us, Scottsdale through the Scottsdale officer. But that information would be gathered daily. Scottsdale would bring theirs, Gilbert would bring theirs, Chandler would bring theirs, and every day, this group of people will analyze that information, trying to look at patterns, see if or similarities, and then those patterns and similarities are disseminated back to all the agencies involved. So if, for instance, there's a crime trend involving home invasions and it's in Chandler, that information would come to Mesa, and then if we begin seeing something that fit that, we'd already be that much further ahead. But citizens would report it the way they always do. They don't have to worry about contacting the Fusion Center. Just get it to Mesa Police Department the way they always do. And these people under Kevin's direction will put that together and then disseminate it to all the participating agencies.
Okay. Tom?
I think I read, I just looked in the study report, the council study report. It wasn't in there, so it must have been in the Chief Gascon's report on the state of the Mesa Police Department, where the West Valley cities are starting to put together their own fusion center, or am I making this up, and was he referring to something else?
Mayor and Councilmember Rawls, I believe what you're referring to is the COPLINK.
Okay, you're right.
And COPLINK does dovetail into this because that is going to provide us that tool, but I think what you're referring to is
COPLINK. Right. I didn't have it in front of me, but I knew there was something that we were initiating that the West Side cities were going to do as well. One of the things that I would recommend is, even though they're not participating, we might want to encourage Phoenix and then the West Side communities to do the same thing, both because they don't honor geographic borders, whether it's East Valley or East Valley cities, and sharing the information with Phoenix and with the West Valley cities, even if they're not part of the Fusion Center, would be a good way to get them to see the value of it and then to do it themselves. They may not be participating right away, but as you share the information with them, they probably will then say, hey, wait a minute, we want to get into this on the input side as well. And I will tell you that this is really important. As many of you know, I used to do criminal defense work, and many, many times I have seen police reports and jail records of somebody being arrested in Peoria for auto theft, having participated in auto thefts in seven other cities with 20 pending cases, and they're released because Peoria doesn't have any idea that this same person is wanted in seven other jurisdictions for 14 other crimes. So the sharing of this information is really invaluable in keeping criminals off the street, not just getting them off the street the first time, but keeping them off, because you don't know what you don't know, and that's the scary part. And this is very important information in intelligence gathering and sharing. So I applaud the effort.
Thank you, sir, Mayor, and Councilmember Rawls. The Chief Gascon has already given us direction that we will share this information throughout the valley, not only if they request it, but if we find that it could be of any value. So we will be participating or providing that information to anybody, regardless of whether they're participating. It can only help us.
Well, it only helps us, and it's also going to encourage them to see the value of it, and then they're going to say, well, let's get in on the input. So it all helps everyone. So
we just may need a bigger room.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I am.
But we will come. If people want to come, we're not turning anyway at the door for other jurisdictions to come participate.
That's correct. We're available, and this information and this process can be available to anybody that's interested.
That can also be the resource for expanding to your hopeful hours. You don't necessarily have to have more than 8 workstations, because then you can cover 20 hours a week, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, rather than what you're doing now. So, no, it's great program.
Thank you.
Okay, Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't know if you've already contacted the Fort McDowell community, but I know that their president said today he was very interested in being involved in these collaborations with police in the East Valley. So you might want to contact them. I actually have the number of their police chief. My assistant has it, if you'd like to get that from her. I'm assuming that people could call the police non-emergency number, which is 644, is it 2211?
Yep. 2211, yes.
Yeah, 644-2211, if they have information they want to share. This goes back to the Homeland Security training that I also, I just had. They were talking about the fact that they are more concerned about smaller communities now in some ways than larger communities because of the lack of intelligence and intelligence gathering. But as we talked, I think most people believe and have believed for a long time that what you're going to start doing, you've been doing always. And the kind of thing that Tom talked about, Councilmember Rawls talked about, is sort of shocking, because we assume that police agencies have the ability to share information right now. And it is surprising to discover that simply, it doesn't exist the way we assume it does. Maybe we've seen so many TV shows that we think it's a little bit different than it is.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, sure. Cops have always shared information. Mesa, Tempe, Chandler, we've always shared information through weekly meetings with the robbery detectives or the credit card investigators or traffic. But this is a much more formalized and constant exchange of information, where you don't have to depend on a particular detective making a meeting. So we've always done this, but this is kind of like supercharged version of it. So we're very excited about the possibilities.
Well, and this involves the technology. And I guess that's the piece that most of us thought was happening, that involvement, that if somebody committed a burglary here, that everybody out in Peoria knew that somebody committed a burglary, that it went out somehow on some sort of national database someplace. I don't know where I thought that was going to stop, but I think this is great work. So thank you for doing this.
But it's not just the technology. I mean, we have 56 minutes to fill here, so I'll take one of them. It's having officers devoted to the intelligence gathering and analysis. It's kind of like, if you read Tom Clancy's, Jack Ryan's, the intelligence, it's the people who analyze the data. You're not going to have a detective now who's got 47 other cases to think about, and all of a sudden he says, wait a minute, there's a connection with this, with something I read about in Scottsdale. These are going to be officers who devoting, officers or civilian personnel, who are going to be devoting all their time to trying to identify those links and those common threads and those trends. That's the brilliant part of it, because you're going to have a focused emphasis on intelligence analysis and then dissemination. Because you can pass through information all day long and you just get information overload and it does no one any good. But when you have people who are focused on it, that's the great part about this. So I really wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you. We're very excited about it.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Rex.
These kind of tools that I really appreciate seeing. I was just reading the latest data on Part 1 crimes and looking at our crime rate going down. I believe we're the only city in the valley with a decreasing crime rate. So these are some of the steps we're taking, and I really appreciate it in the investment in the manpower and the technology. So I think it's paying off.
Thank you. Okay, it's on agenda item 9I, and we'll be reading it into the consent upstairs. So appreciate the update on it.
Thank you.
All right, that is it for the study session. So entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We have no speakers, right? All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Adjourn.